Welcome to Make Your Wealth Work, the podcast where wealth becomes your greatest ally in achieving your dreams.
All right. So I thought we were talking about retirement today, but you tell me that no, we only scratched the surface of this savings thing. So in 20 minutes, you couldn't tell us everything you knew about savings?
Probably.
What's going on, Jeff?
I know I can spell it for sure if I consult the dictionary. Yeah, that's the whole problem is I don't think people understand the purpose of saving, the role of saving, and how exactly to treat it, to respect it, to honor what savings is supposed to do for you. I think I mentioned earlier that most people consider their checking account as their consumption account. I mean, it naturally follows that if you put money in checking, you know, they have those little slips of paper there called checks. So we naturally expect that if we put money into checking, the next step is that I have to write a check, right? So if somebody gets a windfall in, somebody gets a $10,000 bonus, right? Thinking, great, where can I spend that money? What's the first thing I need to do? Well, I really wanted to buy new golf clubs. And I know that's really important. And I better pay off that Visa card because I've been charging that thing up way too much because I've been waiting for this bonus. And so let's do the weekend. Let's make a gift to Aunt Tilly. And where else can we spend the money? Where else can we allocate it? Right. The thinking is the money has to go out. It's like I'm un-American if I'm not sending the money out. Because people don't think, well, what if I had a goal of setting $100,000 as a savings goal? That's my target. A lot of people who, by the way, don't have $100,000 in savings would probably say, well, that's just silly because, you know, banks aren't paying anything on savings. And that would be a waste of money. And many of the financial entertainers would never want you to have $100,000 in savings. That's just because you should be moving that money from savings to investment, right? Talk about a highbrow word. You want to get advice from your cousin Vinny. No offense to people who have a cousin named Vinny. I just love the movie. But I have to get a nice hot tip from my buddy Vinny so that I could start to make some serious bank on that money from savings. Because, you know, I want to make 10, 20, 30, 40% on that money because that's the key to real wealth, isn't it?
Mm, I'd like that.
Yeah.
That's good.
No, that's wrong.
Wait, well, I have a question, man, and I'm going to take you off track for just 1 second because you said something that I think I noticed. Financial entertainers. What is a financial entertainer?
Well, there are people who have an axe to grind. There are people who don't necessarily have credentials in the field, but they do have a following. They're popular. They may browbeat people. They have a bias, which every person who has a pulse has a bias, right?
Yeah.
And they're typically somebody who is sponsored financially by someone. So there's someone over them who has a particular goal that they want to see achieved. They want to steer people toward X. They want people to buy into the next great reverse mortgage scheme or in the next great Ponzi scheme, or they want to send them to their own proprietary website to buy term life insurance, or they want them to buy into some stock market thing. So they're financial entertainers. They have a story to tell. They typically prey on people who really want to be led. These people don't want to necessarily think for themselves, and I could just feel myself getting into trouble here. But I want to serve people and love people and coach people and empower people to think for themselves. So if you take what I'm sharing today and just go and try to throw it back up in your own life, that may not be the best use of this time. But maybe the best use of this time is to take what I'm what I'm saying and find out if it's true in your own life. Find out if it's objectively true, right? I mean, does compound interest work? Does compound interest serve as the best and highest use of my money? Will compound interest make me wealthy? How does compound interest work in the general economic scheme of the country? I mean, those are all valuable questions to ask yourself. And then find out, determine for yourself whether those things are true, first of all, and how you will employ them and implement them in your own life. And start to gain and create a philosophy for yourself. This is my financial philosophy, and I'm going to run with it, I'm going to implement it, and I'm going to create wealth this way. Right? Because we know that there's a million different ways to create wealth. There's not just one. I mean, the business that I'm in is in helping people create the bank, help people create the banking system, helping people create the capital base or the savings foundation from which they can go and pursue their own dreams and their own preferences on how they want to get wealthy. Maybe they want to invest in real estate. Maybe they want to have a bunch of Krispy Kreme outlets. Maybe they want to own a car repair shop. Right? There's thousands and probably millions of ways to create wealth. And people usually don't look at the difference between income creation and wealth creation. So I've had plenty of MD, physician, surgeon clients who make great money and have no money because they had great incomes, but they didn't allocate enough of that income to savings and future endeavors, retirement, the beach house, their kids' college. So they wind up taking loans for their kids' college. They wind up having to work beyond the time that they want to work because they have to, not because they want to. Because they didn't understand savings, right? So one of the problems with savings, and maybe that's why Americans don't get it, why they only save 4%, and the 4% that they do put in, they take back out, is that they don't understand the value of amassing that fantastic amount of capital. And I'm going to tell you, if you own one shop of any kind, and then you go to build a second shop or buy a second rental home or go into a second type of industry, guess what? You're going to need to put more capital, more cash, more savings into that second endeavor. So when I jokingly mentioned earlier, well, I have to get my hands on some capital. How do people do that? They look for a loan. They look for friendly sources of borrowing. They don't look to their own personal stash, their own personal emergency fund. Well, the emergency fund is never big enough. Emergency fund is not for that. Your capital base has to be a big number if you want to invest in something and build something. And folks don't understand, well, the bigger I get, the more capital I have to have behind me. Now, if you're going to adopt this philosophy, you're also going to have to adopt the idea that that capital is worthy of its own interest rate. So I can't take money out of savings and just ignore it. I've got to pay it back with interest, right?
Why do you think that's so hard for people to get? Because, I mean, I'm in this, I use this, and I get it, right? Hey, if I borrow money from myself, I should pay interest because I would have paid interest. And now, not only am I getting whatever I got, but I'm also getting my money back plus interest. Sounds like a good thing, but I think most people fight it. Like, why would I pay myself interest on my own money?
Right. So most people don't respect themselves like they respect the lenders, as I mentioned previously. They don't have that self-respect. Most people would respond that I can't afford to save X. Right? I can't afford it because I have all these bills. I have all these kids. I have all these cars. I have all these obligations. Well, it's a free country and you chose those things that put you into debt. So you chose to put yourself in, please forgive me for this, you chose to put yourself into financial bondage. And then you complain that you're in financial bondage. well, you know, if it wasn't for this $400,000 loan against my house with this nasty 6% interest rate and all these taxes, well, you know what? You have the choice. This is still America. You still have choices on what you can opt to do. If you find it important to build wealth, then you'll determine the path to create that. So why don't I have a lot in savings? Well, because I have all these expenses. Yeah. So you're going to excuse your way to poverty and you're going to stay that way until you decide that you want to change your thinking. You want to stop listening to your neighbors, your friends, your coworkers, and everybody else who's complaining about the same thing. Well, nobody has any money. Well, that's not true. This is the richest country on the planet and one of the most abysmal savings rates, right? We make a lot of money and we spend it all. We insist on spending it all. And I'm not saying that I have solved this problem for myself. But back a long time ago, my wife and I, when we got together, we had debt. And we said, well, we could abandon this debt and declare bankruptcy, or we could earn more interest on the money that we do have saved, which was zero at the time.
Multiplying by zero, huh?
Or we can make more money. And I've always had the philosophy that if I have a choice and I'm forced to put more money into the machine, can I guarantee that I can make double-digit returns next year? No, I can't. But I can guarantee you that I can work hard and work at making more money. So if I insist on elevating my lifestyle next year, 5% more than this year, well, then I better make more than 5% more next year. That's my choice. Now, you can go the other way and you could say, well, you know, money is just not important to me.
Yeah, right.
I'm sorry. That's really not a wise thing to say because you have to eat. At the most fundamental level, unless you decide to live in the mountains and use candles and chop your own firewood and shoot your own animals or fish in a stream, right? You're going to need money for the basics of life. So money is important at a fundamental level. And if you want to live in community and you want to be able to give to others because there are other people who are more needy than we are, then you're going to have to amass capital. Now, there are different aspects of accessing capital, and there are different things that happen to you when you take money out of savings. So it's like a ripple effect. It's not just one thing that happens when you decide to take money out of savings. When you take, and I'm talking about an ordinary savings, let's just keep it at that, keep it at this level, just for the conversation value of it. When I take money out of savings, I'm removing the opportunity to make money in the future. Right. So I'm not only am I removing the principal from my savings, and I'm going to spend the principal. So I'm spending my seed corn, right? I'm spending my prize cow. I'm also spending the future growth on that money, also called lost opportunity cost. And many financial entertainers ignore this principle. It's a very important principle. And it's so important. And it's so widely misunderstood that Coca-Cola didn't get it in the 80s. And Coca-Cola was even following the probably the false premise that we could just take money out of our treasury and build a new plant, build a new railroad siding, build a new trucking depot, and we'll just pay cash because we have it. They were looking at their books and saying, huh, it's funny. We're going broke. And so they brought in this Harvard economist and he said, well, show us how you run your finances. And they laid it all out and he said, oh, I see your problem. How are you going to set up a repayment plan when you just spent the $500 million for that plant and that railroad siding and that trucking depot? Well, we didn't have a payment because we paid cash. Oh, there's your problem because there's a cost of money. Money always has a cost because if that $500 million, add a zero, take away a zero, it doesn't matter. If that money was in somebody else's account, they'd be earning money on it. And you have an obligation to your stockholders to earn money on your capital. So at the very least, you have a cost of money. And then if you were lending that money to somebody, you'd want to profit on that. You'd want to charge them excess interest above the cost of money. So let's say 4% for the cost of money and another 4% for your profit. So you should be repaying yourself at 8%, for example. And actually, once Coca-Cola discovered this, the concept that we're talking about here is economic value added. Right? There are books written about it. It goes along with present value and future value and lost opportunity cost. If we start to respect our money the way we respect the bank's money, we'll pay ourselves interest for the money that we borrow, even from ourselves. And if we start to get that, we'll start to realize that the only way for compound interest to work is for money to sit. And compound interest doesn't work unless somebody else has control of our money. And as soon as somebody else has control of our money, that means we don't have control of our money. And if we don't have control of our money, that means somebody else is making the lion's share of the profit. I hope these things kind of are rolling together.
Yeah.
And so I want to change people's thinking about themselves, about their own value, about what people are worth. So when somebody says to me, I can't save 10%, because at the end of the year, if I save 10%, I would have $10,000 in the bank on my $100,000 of income. And 10 years later, I'd have $100,000, not including the interest I might earn. And I just can't afford that. Well, so what you're telling me is there are financial overseers in your life who could be called slave masters, who could be called lenders, who could be called masters, who could be called bosses. So what you're really telling me is you don't own your own future. You have signed a promissory note on your life to somebody else, and you would prefer to live on that credit card and then just have somebody else manage the money. So I keep this on hand, and you're not going to see this if you're just following the audio, but I took one of my old American Express Platinum cards that they needed to destroy because they got a new one, and I tried putting it into the shredder, and this is what happened, because it's actually made of metal. Had to rest for a couple of days before I unraveled the pieces parts. But this reminds me that this is really what your credit cards should look like, right? It should look like a shriveled, chewed up piece of garbage, because it's gonna eat your lunch. Wow. When it comes to your financial life. So you're gonna devote your life, your life's work, to paying other people. You're paying their mortgage, you're paying their kids' tuition, you're paying their groceries, you're paying their lifestyle. They're driving a Porsche and you're not. Because you think that they're worthy of collecting 90 or 100% of your income. And I kind of don't feel that way.
I feel like this deserves just a mic drop. Like, phew, that's it. Because there's a masterclass on money and slavery all built into one episode. Anything you want to say as we're coming on to the close on this one, Joe?
Sure. That idea of slavery is a really important concept. And I want folks to really think about the word. It's not just a cultural or political or racial epithet. Most Americans are living lives as slaves because they chose to.
Yeah.
Financial slaves because they chose to.
They don't know any better. I mean, that's what they're doing here.
There, like, you go.
This is an education.
Right. And you can't get out of that rut, can't get out of that ditch, that grave you're digging yourself, unless you open your eyes and discover, realize that you're in that rut. You're in that ditch. You're in that grave. And so the first thing toward recovery in any aspect is recognizing this is where I am today.
Yeah. Dude, so powerful. And before we wrap up, I want you to know something. You've already gotten your first fan. My wife was listening to the show and she's like, I don't want to be a loser anymore. I don't want to say. She came all ashamed. It's working, Joe. That's what I'm telling you, brother. It's working already.
All right. I appreciate that.
So that is a wrap. We will be back in your earbuds next time.
This is the PodcastFactory.com.